Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Nationally, the picture is grim, and the numbers are crushing. More than 2 million Canadians used food banks just in the month of March this year. The final figures for 2025 are not in yet. Locally, the situation is mirrored. In this interview with Megan Flindle, Executive Director of the Northumberland Fair Share Food Bank, she will outline the increasing numbers of people using its services in Port Hope and Cobourg. She will also discuss new initiatives, including a mobile food market. You will learn about the drop in food donations, but the rise in people and organizations giving cash as everyone feels the pinch at the grocery stores. Listen and see what you think as everyone struggles to eat properly. I'm absolutely delighted to have on the show today Executive Director of the Northumberland Fair Share Food Bank, Megan Flindle. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Nearly 2.2 million people visited a food bank in a single month in March of this past year, according to Hunger Count, which is from the Food Banks Canada. What message does that send to Canadians?
I think Canadians know what we've all been experiencing, and that this cost of living crisis doesn't seem to be abating. We're all feeling it. I know I feel it when I go to the grocery store, when I pay my bills, when I fill up at the gas tank, and that's translating in these visits that we are seeing at food banks.
The report states that one in five food bank clients are employed, compared to one in 10 in 2019. What are the reasons for this from your perspective?
Well, I think, there's a few reasons, obviously. So we look at the difference in what minimum wage is to what a living wage is here in Northumberland in 2025. That's $22.20. So there's a pretty big gap there. And that adds up for sure. And then I think people are just trying to balance, there's part-time work, there's some work. It's very different out there, and people just can't keep up on the wages that they're making. They're not keeping up with inflation and the cost of living and goods.
You made a distinction there between minimum wage and a living wage. Can you explain the difference and what that means?
Yeah, so the minimum wage is the minimum wage across Ontario. We saw it go up recently to $17.60. The living wage is, it's a differentiator, and you can go to that website and see for the different areas across Ontario what people need to really truly live comfortably an hour to cover bills and the different costs of life. And for Northumberland in this year, it's $22.20 now.
Can you give us a more clear picture of what it's meant to do?
I think what we find in these times, in this cost of living crisis, is that there's a disproportionate impact on people with lower incomes. So they have to spend more on the essentials like housing and bills and food. More of their income is fed towards those. And so by bringing that up to a living wage, there would be more left over at the end of the month for them to be able to go to grocery stores and get a full grocery shop in, to have any sort of, frill in their life potentially.
What are the numbers?
Locally, we're experiencing the same thing that you're hearing reported in that Hunger Count from Food Banks Canada or the similar Feed Ontario one. Visits are up. So I know we spoke last year, so it's delightful to be back. So I explained last year that there's different ways that we track some of these metrics, one being the unique individuals, and then one being the total visits. So locally, I mean, we're over 30,000 visits now this year already, at our two food banks.
Just so we're clear, what does it mean a visit? What's a visit?
So our visit is any time that somebody comes in. So if I was coming in, I would count as one unique individual, but I could visit every other week. So I would make multiple visits over the year. I could make up to 26.
All right. Can you break that down for us then as to the number of people that are being served?
We're almost at 4,000 this year. So 3,980 this year, with 872 of those being new to our food banks.
Can you put that into context as compared to before?
I believe last year, our visits were we had almost 3,700 unique individuals, but at the end of the year we had hit about just over 31,000 visits. So we're outpacing our total visits this year when we consider that there's still 2 months to go in our year.
So, how do those numbers compare to previous years? What are you seeing in terms of increases?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look at pre-COVID numbers, so that's 2019, so that's some time ago, we've doubled our numbers since then, similar to Food Banks Canada. If we look at last year, we're almost at 10% more. So Food Banks Canada predicted that we would see a rise of about 25% this year, so we're not quite at that, but we still have 2 months of service to go. So I'll be interested to see what happens at the end of the year, as this time does tend to get busier with all the holiday costs also hitting households now.
We've seen in the past that there are trends around seniors and children's families. How is it breaking down this year? Is it much different?
It's pretty similar to previous years. We're still seeing slightly above average here in Northumberland on youth under the age of 18, sitting at almost 34%, and it's usually about 30% across Canada. And for our seniors, I know that can be measured in different ways, different age groups, but the data we have here for us is 60 and above, and that's higher than the average. It's just over 13% in Northumberland.
Is there any reason that seniors have to use the food bank more than other demographics?
I think anybody that is on a fixed income these days, and that includes pensioners, CPP, old age security, they're finding that money is not going as far as it used to be, and those adjustments are not happening for them, so they're struggling more with that.
What about first-time users? You mentioned this earlier. What are you seeing in terms of trends of first-time users?
Yeah, we're seeing people that their stories are very similar, that there could be an immediate crisis that happened, something that is a vehicle repair that was a lot of money to cover that forced them into a situation like this. Obviously, there's job losses. So we know in the surrounding neighborhoods, Oshawa, Peterborough, we've seen a lot of job losses. We're even seeing it here in Coburg, obviously, with Post closing up at the end of December. So that's going to have an impact on new users, people that haven't had to use our services before. But I think also people just, they don't have a lot of other places to turn. So when times get really tough, at least we're here and we can help out in that way.
Are you finding first-time users are as hesitant as they used to be in regards to using a food bank?
That's a great question, Robert. I think that it's still there, truthfully. I do think that there is still that stigma. I think people, as they navigate through, we're trying to find different touch points to meet people where they are. So this summer, we launched our mobile market that went out to rural communities with some extra perishables that we had, some bread, some produce, some things that we had in excess. And we really tried to make it that anybody in the community could come to these mobile markets and take anything that they needed. And that was to try to help with some of those barriers that people were maybe having with asking for help, or knowing if they needed to go to a food bank fully. And something like that might just help them in times when they're struggling a little bit. So we heard a lot of that through our mobile markets, that it's needed and that people are unsure whether they should be using a food bank, whether it's they qualify for it, whether they are using it and maybe taking away from people that need a food bank more than they do. I think people are unsure still. And so when I speak to that part of our community, I say, I would much rather you come and you have something to eat, and you come to the food banks if you are in need, then worry about those aspects for sure.
You mentioned the mobile food market. What was the inspiration behind that? What need did you see that you felt that this was a solution?
I certainly, I had heard other food banks in rural areas trying something like this with some successes. And the thing with perishable foods is that they have a timeline on them. If you sit with vegetables and fruits and breads for too long, they won't be viable nutritious foods anymore. And we had this we had prolific amount this summer, and so it was partially, how do we not waste food, which is very important in the food ecosystem and sustainability, to food banks, but to myself as well. And then how do we reach more rural communities? Now, some of these communities do have their own food banks. This was in addition to that. And when we went to those communities, we would let those food banks know, this is what we're coming. We're just trying to get more food into the community as a whole, and we're trying to not create waste. It is, transportation can be one of those hard points for why people are struggling with food insecurity. We have communities across Northumberland, some that are food deserts, which would mean that they don't have a grocery store. That's difficult for some lower income households. If you're shopping at a convenience store as your main source of food, your prices are a lot higher than you would experience coming to a lower grocery store, lower prices there.
You mentioned that there was an influx in perishable items. What was that a result of?
So it's part of a program actually from Feed Ontario. So that's the Ontario mem we're part of that membership, where they are able to rescue larger amounts of produce in the Mississauga, the Waterloo area, where there's higher production. They can be used at some of the grocery stores. So instead of it going to waste, this year they were able to set up a truck that came eastern, and I'm sure in other directions as well, and would drop at hubs to redistribute some of this excess, whether that was produce or bread. And so we had an influx in that way.
So was that specifically to Fair Share, or was that to some other organization within Northumberland?
So we were able to utilize the Food for All warehouse as a centralized drop point for that program, so that everybody would have access that used and had a membership there at Food for All.
So going forward, is this mobile food market sustainable, or is this going to happen over the winter as well, or was it something simply seasonal?
So my intent originally was for it to be seasonal. Obviously we had our volunteers driving and setting up outdoors. It was beautiful. I did it a couple of times. It was really a great, enjoyable hour or hour and a half of your time. But obviously that can't happen. We were just talking about the weather right now and the snow. We can't have our volunteers standing outside. It's not sustainable throughout these months. So what we've done instead, is we have a market stop now, we're calling it, here at Fair Share, in Cobourg location currently at 700 Darcy, on a Tuesday and a Friday afternoon from 1 to 3, where we're trying to do the same type of thing. We'll put out the extra produce and bread, and sometimes we have other items, like we had a silk milk for a while, for a week, that any community member can come in and grab from our table. And that's just a way to try to get, again, more perishables out into the community, not waste, have people that maybe are struggling a little bit but not sure if they want to come do a full shop at a food bank, have a little bit more access to food.
This market, anybody can come. There's no threshold. You don't have to fill out a form. There's nothing. It's just there's stuff there. You come, you grab some, and away you go.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Yep. And you can take what you need, and then, we'll replenish the table for as long as we can.
The collaboration between the food banks. What is going on in terms of collaboration between these organizations?
The tricky one. Most food banks operate as fully volunteer organizations, and so FareShare, we have there's two staff currently, so it gives us a little bit more bandwidth to do some of these things. Whereas other food banks, when you're running on volunteer power, it's not always easy to get us all in one room together, or be on completely the same schedules by any mean. So we do try to reach out by emails. At one point we were pre-COVID doing some meetings, but we really just try to support each other as best we can. And I know, FareShare often gets an opportunity like this one where we can speak and we can talk about food insecurity and some of the things that we're working on, but it's just as valuable to link into the food bank in your community in Northumberland, and that may be, in Warkworth or Colburn or Brighton. Their needs are probably very similar to what we're experiencing. We know that there's growth everywhere.
If there isn't cooperation, then how do the, does everybody get served then?
By everybody gets served, you mean the population, like the general population,
That's right.
or?
Those in need. I mean, if I live in some part of the county where I don't have a food cupboard or a food bank near me, and you were mentioning earlier, transportation could be an issue. I guess the question is why do we need so many small ones when maybe, one big one with branches or satellites or whatever, might be more efficient, more effective, and more people would get access.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure I have an answer for it. I think it would be a big undertaking to make a change like that, to have an organization that had the capacity to do something that large. And that tends to be why it's smaller food banks or food cupboards or kind of pop-ups that happen, and often related to churches and religious organizations, because it's a lot of work.
Just out of curiosity, just to go back to the mobile market, do you have any stats on how many people access that over the summer?
Some of our busier ones, we were seeing anywhere from 20 to 45 visit a week. And then we had some smaller ones where we maybe only saw a dozen people.
Another thing that you did this year was the FareShare Garden. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we had a FareShare garden where we were growing our own produce. It was our second year of it. Again, we had seen other food banks use this model as a way to bring in more fresh goods. And it was a lot of work. It was a lot of volunteer power. It's a lot to keep an eye on. If you don't have it very close to your facilities, there's a lot. So we were able to get just over 400 pounds of produce from our garden this year. But I don't think it will be something that we will try again in the future. And with the addition of this new produce run that we're on biweekly, we were seeing an influx of these types of foods already into our food banking system. So I think we probably won't explore that again next summer.
Earlier this year, you received a $150,000Ontario Trillium Foundation grant. What did this money go towards?
Yeah, so that was a 2-year grant over the last 2 years, and it finished this year. And that was to rebuild post-COVID. And so that was to help us rebuild our volunteer base. It was to put in a volunteer management system. We were able to hire a volunteer coordinator. And it was really about, during COVID, many nonprofits lost a lot of volunteers. People were, we all know, scared, especially to touch groceries, and there was that feeling of staying indoors. And so we lost volunteers, and we had some trouble getting them back. So that was put towards that. We were able to more than double our volunteer base, which is excellent because being able to launch more programs like the mobile market, like the garden, like the students' summer snack sacks that we did the last 2 summers, it takes more volunteers. And to be able to run our in-person, our deliveries, our pickup program, it's very, very dependent on our amazing volunteers.
In your audited financial statement from 2024, it says that there were questions about the viability of the food bank. Is that still a concern?
I think FairShare is in a good financial position at the moment, and is viable for the future, but it certainly is costing more and more in food purchases to maintain food banks these days, whereas previously we were able to rely a lot on food drives, food coming in. That is one sector that we have noticed in the last 2 years, particularly, that we're seeing a slight decline. Luckily, we do have a strong donor base. We've got great organizations, an amazing community. So we've been able to hold really steady there. It's just the actual food coming in is a little bit less through our events like Crema Cruisers, through our donation bins and our grocery stores. That's where we're starting to see the decline. But I don't, I anticipate the fair share will be needed for many years. And we will be able to be here for many years to meet that need.
Why do you think there's been a decline in donations at the grocery stores?
I think it's for the reasons that we can feel when we go into a grocery store. We see those prices have changed. And so previously, households and individuals who've been able to grab that extra can of soup or maybe grab a few products and put them in our carts at the end of our grocery stores are now feeling like they actually have to put things back on their shelves that they would want for their own household, that they are now facing that cost of living increase, and it's just not feasible for them to donate in the same way. And I understand it because my grocery bills have gone up.
You mentioned earlier the cost of gas going up, the cost of utilities is going up. What are you doing to adjust to those kinds of rising costs, and what kinds of pressures are they putting on the organization?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in Coburg, we are able to rent from Northam Industrial, so from the town. So we have a great rent here with them. It is increasing, of course, just as everybody's rent is, but we're very grateful to have that agreement. This year for our Port Hope location, we're actually looking to relocate. So we're looking, if anybody has any wonderful locations in Port Hope, we're looking for something new there on the transit routes with some parking. To be able to serve that population a little bit better. And then honestly, it's really about our control on food purchasing. That is our biggest cost annually in our budget, and that's a lot of the work that I do with wholesalers, local stores, finding new programs for free items that we can get on, and that's our biggest area that we try to control our costs.
Can you remind us just how often you're open and when you're open?
Absolutely. So in Coburg, we are open on Wednesdays, 9:30 to 12:30, and then we reopen in the evening, 5:30 to 8. We run a pickup and delivery program on our Thursdays, so you can call ahead, place an order, and select a time to come in on Thursday afternoon. Friday morning, we're open 9:30 to 12:30, and Saturday open we're open 9:30 to 12:30. And in Port Hope, we're open only on a Wednesday, and that's 9:30 to 12:30 in the morning and 5 to 7:30 in the evening. And that's part of our reason behind looking for a new location is something where we can open a bit more frequently in Port Hope.
Do you aspire to opening more frequently because of the demand?
Yes, I mean, there are definitely limitations to it. In Coburg, I think we're open about as often as we can be, because when you think of the amount of restocking and receiving and unloading of trucks and things we need to do to prepare the food bank, we need some of those off times to be able to do that type of work. We might be able to open a bit more for a pickup program appointment style, maybe another day. But in Port Hope, there's definitely some runway. And so by having a new location where we have access 24/7, we'd really be able to assess that need in that community a little bit better and open at different times.
If you were going to meet the community demand, how often do you think you should have to be open?
I think that's what we tried to do in Coburg, and that's why we opened on the Saturday mornings, was to try to really meet households that were working, because we see that is becoming a growing segment for us. And so we want to do the same type of thing in Port Hope and open some more days up there. I think we're I think we're doing pretty well with the amount of time that we are actually open and available to the community here.
What sort of advocacy and public education are you doing?
That's a great question. It's definitely a difficult role for us to fill with the limited staff hours that we do have. So we do try to advocate during Hunger Action Month in September and get out and talk to local organizations and agencies and community members talking about food insecurity. There's definitely some upcoming bills that if people are interested in these types of things may want to pay close attention to. Bill 60 is making it easier to evict low-income renters, and Bill S 206 is talking about a guaranteed livable basic income. So I do invite community members to look into some of those types of things. We will post about them as we learn about them, and encourage people to write or call into their MPP.
Because I guess that was going to be my next question. Often you and I have spoken about the reliance on food banks as a safety net. I think initially these were supposed to be temporary measures, and now they're part of the fabric of our community. How sustainable is the current model as it exists?
Great question. I don't think it is sustainable if it continues at the pace that it's been going. And I think, there are organizations, there are food bank organizations that are larger organizations that may be able to continue on and keep going. But I do worry about some of those smaller food banks and whether they'll be viable in the future with the increasing demand that they're seeing. I think that's really gonna put some strain on them. And that's what we're hearing from Food Banks Canada. And that's why they're pushing so much for change. But the difficulty is that the change needs to come from all levels of government, and that takes time and that takes effort, and I don't have the answers for it, but I know that it starts with better supports. We see obviously some of the stuff we've already talked about, but people on social assistance or disability, we need to see some of these rates rise, and make sure that people are really taken care of.
Earlier this year, Northumberland County reviewed its role supporting food banks across the region. Can you describe the current system, and has there been any changes that have impacted your organization?
Yeah, so they did mention that they are looking to get out of running the county run Food for All warehouse, and that they'll be looking for, a third party nonprofit to take that on, which is a great idea. I think that there will be some there could be some potential benefit to having a nonprofit run that organization, from a fundraising standpoint and those types of things. Currently, it has had not a lot of impact on Fair Share, just because they're continuing the status quo and they're examining it from behind the scenes and figuring out, who can take this on, where is it headed. I don't anticipate that they're going to just completely pull their services at Food for All until they have an answer that they're satisfied with and certainty that the county will be able to maintain that warehouse without, Northumberland County running it.
Christmas is quickly approaching. What
It is.
plans are there this year in terms of helping people at this special time?
Great question. So we run an annual campaign we call our Turkey Ticket Drive. So that is where a lot of our local retailers in Cobourg and Port Hope help us to sell tickets for, what we say is $20 covers a holiday meal for a household. And that could include a turkey or a ham, potatoes, stuffing, cranberries or pineapple, kind of all the fixings, gravy, as well as a holiday breakfast. So that could be pancakes and syrup or, maybe it's something, where we it's French toast or something different to make the holidays feel a little bit more special for households facing food insecurity. So we'll put out a special menu over 2 weeks where people can get that on top of their regular visit to our food bank. It's not pre-cooked. It's the items to cook their own family meal or to bring to a family meal celebration. So we're very excited by that. And this year, our printing for our tickets and our advertising has actually been sponsored by Dinarasca Financial Credit credit union. Last year, we were able to raise just over $17,000, which probably covered about, if every one of the households that we served, it would cover about half. So we're really hoping to kind of get over the $20,000 mark this year.
Once we get past Christmas and New Year's, what's next for the food bank?
Oh my goodness, great question. As I mentioned, we'll be looking for a new location in Port Hope. We'll be evaluating our mobile market strategy for next summer, if that's something we can feasibly do, or if there's another avenue we want to go down. We'll be looking at our summer snack sack program again. So that's helping with the student nutrition programs when they're out of school, and helping food insecure youth have more access to food during the summers. So we are able to expand that to some extra food banks in Northumberland this year to provide to their food bank clients as well. So we're hoping to be able to expand that, provided we find funding or a grant for that type of thing. So I think we're gonna focus on those and seeing where we need to expand to meet people where they are. I know we mentioned transportation, rural food deserts. I'm certain that there is more that can be done in that area. It's just how much capacity we have to take on next year.
If someone's listening and they'd like to help out, how can they do that?
Well, there's a variety of ways. Of course, you can always donate funds. And some of the best ways to donate funds is to become a monthly donor. We find that we do end up getting a lot of our donations sort of at the end of the year in the giving season, October to December. And so having that monthly income come in through some of those summer months that are a bit leaner for donations is wonderful. You can bring food. We're in Coburg every day, 9 to 4. We're always there on Wednesdays in Port Hope, and you can volunteer, of course, or you can host your own event. So some of the great things that I hear people do is, I don't need any gifts for my birthday. Instead, I've asked for people to donate a food item or funds to the food bank, and those types of things are very impactful to us.
Megan Flindle, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me. It was delightful.
That was Executive Director of the Northumberland Fair Share Food Bank, Megan Flindle. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.